Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. This from Mark Thomas's Architects, written by Michael Blake. In a recent blog post, Baby Boomers Will Demand Choices in Their Retirement, my colleague Faith Nevins touched on some of the lifestyle needs and expectations of today's retiring seniors. Many choices addressing these needs and expectations have arisen over the past decade, and values such as maintaining or enhancing personal health and fitness, particularly in stimulating experiences, and the desire to contribute to the community in meaningful ways have become strong motivators influencing retirement choices. Seniors with mobility are looking at both small towns, especially near metropolitan areas, with convenience to airports, medical facilities, arts and culture, and recreation nearby, for their generally friendly and simple lifestyle, as well as larger urban centers responding to the allure of stimulating cultural life, shopping, good public transportation, and an exciting lifestyle that may have been deferred while their kids were growing up. Well, given the choice, I believe most of us want to age in place. With the variety of aging in place models we have today, that could be a reality for some who might not have had the opportunity before. Today's articles will describe three models: the continuing care retirement community, the naturally occurring retirement community, and the university-based retirement community. Articles include the Jewish Ledger's 2016 Senior Lifestyles, AARP's Caregiving Continuing Care Retirement Communities, Wikipedia on Naturally Occurring Retirement Communities, the Jewish Federation of North America's Aging in Place Initiative, NORC, Intergenerational Housing for the Seniors on College Campuses from Thomas Marks Architects, and the PBS NewsHour, Why Boomers Are Retiring to College. Beginning with AARP's Continuing Care Retirement Communities, which is directed at those who have parents or loved ones as candidates for CCRC, but clearly applicable to those of us who might be considering a CCRC. Caregiving Resource Center about Continuing Care Retirement Communities. When your parent or loved one, or yourself, decides that they're ready to move from the family home, Continuing Care Retirement Communities, CCRCs, may be worth considering. Offering a variety of services within one community, CCRCs guarantee lifetime housing, social activities, and increased levels of care as needs change. These features, however, do come at a price. CCRCs are part independent living, part assisted living, and part skilled nursing home. CCRCs offer a tiered approach to the aging process, accommodating residents' changing needs. Upon entering, healthy adults can reside independently in single-family homes, apartments, or condominiums. When assistance with everyday activities becomes necessary, they can move into assisted living or nursing care facilities. These communities give older adults the option to live in one location for the duration of their life, with much of their future care already figured out. This can provide a great level of comfort to both you, your parents, and yourself, and take much of the stress out of the caregiving relationship. What CCRs cost? The most expensive of all long-term care options, CCRCs, require a hefty entrance fee as well as monthly charges. Entrance fees can range from $100,000 to $1 million, an upfront sum to prepay for care as well as provide the facility money to operate. Monthly charges can range from $3,000 to $5,000, but may increase as needs change. These fees are dependent on a variety of factors, including the health of you or your loved one, the type of housing chosen, and whether or not you will rent or buy, the number of residents living in the facility, and the types of services in the contract. Additional fees may be incurred for other options, including housekeeping, meal service, transportation, and social activities. There are three types of contracts for CCRCs. Life care or extended contract. This is the most expensive option, but offers unlimited assisted living, medical treatment, and skilled nursing care without additional charges. Modified contract. This contract offers a set of services provided for a set length of time. When that time is expired, other services can be obtained, but for higher monthly fees. And finally, the fee-for-service contract. The initial enrollment fee may be lower, but assisted living and skilled nursing will be paid for at their market rates. It's very important to review each option as well as the long-term financial plan to support them. Often, charges above and beyond the entrance cost and monthly fees arise. Ensure that everyone understands just how much money will be needed to support this housing option. Also, make sure the facility you're considering will be financially viable over the long term. Get assurance that 10 to 15 years down the road, the CCRC will still be operating and able to provide care that's already been paid for. Where to begin? CCRCs in your area. Investigate thoroughly and meet with a representative who can walk you through the different housing options, cost structures, and contract choices. Things to look out for and ask while you're visiting. If you or your loved one decides on a CCRC, think about a request for a weekend or even a week-long stay at the facility to ensure it's the right choice. Once already to commit, run the contract by an attorney to be sure everything is spelled out as it was agreed upon in the facility. If you or your parents are considering a CCRC, be sure you understand what will happen if you or one of them needs a higher level of care or dies, or if circumstances dramatically change. Investigate whether there are circumstances where they can get a refund or leave any of entrance fees to their estate should a change be necessary. And when you're visiting, spend ample time visiting each part of the facility, regardless of whether you or your parent or a loved one is in perfect health. Chances are someone will need assisted living or nursing care at some point. And make sure you see all financial reports, licensing and inspection reports, and any complaints. And now more on CCRCs from the Jewish Ledger. Senior lifestyles, more seniors finding peace of mind at continuing care communities. Are you worried you might one day outlive your retirement savings? Running out of money is a common concern, and the sad reality is it does happen to some people. The Administration on Aging predicts the number of Americans age 65 and older will reach 98 million in less than 50 years. So, it's possible many will struggle to take care of themselves physically, medically, and financially. 70% of everyone 65 and older will need some type of long-term care at some point in their lives, the Department of Health and Human Services says. When health issues force seniors to require a higher level of care, they can quickly exhaust their retirement savings. The burden of caring for them either falls on loved ones or Medicaid. A growing number of seniors are turning to life care communities to preserve their own long-term well-being and to ease emotional and financial stresses on their families. Here are some common questions that might be answered about a caring life care community. Who is a candidate for a life care community? Anyone older than 62 may be eligible to live in a life care community if they meet the financial and medical qualifications. Most continuing care retirement communities offer multiple types of accommodations, including independent living, assisted, Alzheimer's, dementia care, and rehabilitation, along with skilled nursing. It means you can enter the community at any stage, including when you're still independent. As your care needs increase, you move between accommodation and care level. What should I know about entry and monthly fees? And these are a little bit different from the first article I read. Continuing care communities charge an entry fee that is typically in the range of $150,000 to $200,000. Many seniors choose to fund this fee through the sale of their home when they need to downsize into a more manageable living situation. Fees can vary depending on the type of accommodation and level of care you need. Most monthly service fees average $2,500 to $3,500, depending on the type of contract. While the fee might vary slightly from year to year and depending on the level of care you need, your community may agree to a cap increase. Brookdale Senior Living, for example, voluntarily caps annual increases at the Consumer Price Index plus 2% at most of its life care communities. How will entering a life care community affect my taxes and estate planning? The IRS considers life care to be a prepaid medical expense, so tax deductions are often available for portions of the upfront entry fee and monthly service fee, typically up to 40% of the fee. Because deductions can vary state to state, you should consult with your tax advisor to get a better idea of the tax benefits. Entering a life care community can also affect your estate planning. A life care contract takes care of the portion of your planning that would address funding your health care needs. The contract ensures your health care needs will be met even if you run out of money through no fault of your own. You may also choose a refundable contract that returns a portion, up to 90%, of your entry fee to your designated beneficiary after you pass away. What are the health benefits of living in a life care community? Well, your medical needs will be met, of course, throughout your life. Without you having to worry about how you'll pay for the care you need, the communities also offer mental health benefits. Live entertainment, special meals and events, daily opportunities to dine with others, or participate in games and hobby groups that ensure you'll never lack stimulation, activities, or interaction with others. Life care also encourages seniors to remain independent for as long as possible, without restrictions on driving, traveling, and shopping, as long as you're able. Longer lives and increasing health care costs mean it's a harsh reality that many seniors will struggle to care for themselves later in life, says Dr. Kevin O'Neill, a clinical professor of aging studies at the University of South Florida and chief medical officer of Brookdale Senior Living. The good news is life care communities can be a long-term solution, helping seniors maximize the value of their retirement savings and ensuring that they'll have access to the care they need throughout their lives. And now from Wikipedia, we're going to naturally occurring retirement communities. It's a term used to describe a community that has a large portion of residents over 60, but was not specifically meant to meet the needs of seniors living independently in their homes. NORC, commonly referred to as a NORC, may develop in three different ways. A large number of persons moved into a community when they were younger and then aged in place. A large number of older people move into a community, an immigration. Or older people remain in a community as younger residents move out, emigration. The demographic term NORC, or NORC, was first coined in the 1980s by Michael Hunt, professor of urban planning at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. NORCs are geographically defined either by the dimensions of an apartment building complex or by the boundaries of a neighborhood. While NORCs were first identified in urban settings, they can be found in communities large and small, and in all geographic settings. A NORC can generally be categorized as one of three types. Classic NORC, also called a housing-based, vertical, or closed NORC, is a classic NORC that may be single age-integrated apartment building, a housing complex with multiple buildings under common management, or an area where a number of apartment buildings are clustered together. A NORC neighborhood-based, also known as horizontal or open NORC, a neighborhood-based NORC is typically an age-integrated neighborhood of one and two family homes. And the rural NORC, also known as a naturally occurring retirement region, is a rural NORC that covers a large geographic area in which the population density is low, typically comprising one and two family homes. The first NORC program was established in 1986 at Penn South Houses, a 10-building, 2,800-unit moderate-income housing cooperative located in New York City, with support from the UJA Federation of New York. Since then, the NORC program model has been broadly replicated at the local, state, and national levels and can be found in more than 25 states across the country. And more on NORCs from the History of the Jewish Federation of North America's Aging in Place Initiative, the NORC Supportive Services Model. What makes this program model unique is the core mechanism through which the intervention is delivered, through community building and self-sufficiency. It involves a partnership building process in which seniors, building owners and managers, local service providers, philanthropies, and other community institutions and organizers come together to create a coordinated basket of services and programs that support the strengths and meet the needs and wants of seniors living in the NORC. Critical to this endeavor is the active leadership and participation of the seniors themselves in the governance of the program. The NORC SSP basket of services falls into four main categories: case management, case assistance, and social work services; healthcare management and healthcare assistance, including disease prevention and health promotion; education, socialization, and recreational activities; and volunteer opportunities for project participants and other interested community members. In addition to reduced social isolation, the intended outcomes of the intervention incorporating a NORC SSP in the naturally occurring retirement community are improved communication and collaboration among the service providers and the community, such that gaps and redundancies in services are eliminated, and ultimately the creation of strong, healthy communities in which older adults remain living independently with increased security and quality of life. Characteristically, the NORC Supportive Service Programs organize and locate a range of coordinated health care, draw strength from partnerships and unite housing entities and their residents, promote independence and healthy aging by engaging seniors before a crisis and responding to their changing needs over time, and providing seniors with vital roles in the development and operation of the program, and filling the gaps, but not duplicating, where Medicare, Medicaid, and Older Americans Act services are insufficient or inadequately coordinated. And now, from the PBS NewsHour, Why Boomers Are Retiring to College by Ellen Rolfs. Ray and Ann Goldwire lived and worked in the college town of Toledo, Ohio, before they retired to a resort-style retirement community. There, they expected to enjoy a life of leisure. Instead, they quickly grew weary of the activities that absorbed most of the retirees' days. "It was golf, 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 bridge," Ann Goldwire said. "Ray and I didn't really get along there well." In retirement, it's not uncommon for older Americans to find themselves isolated from their communities. "We've built a lot of really beautiful retirement communities in this country, but unfortunately, they are in many ways completely separated from the rest of society, said Andrew Carl, an expert in senior housing and a professor at George Mason University. A bird in a gilded cage is still a bird in a cage. So the Goldwires moved once again, this time to Gainesville, Florida, the home of the University of Florida, nearly 50 years after he graduated with a degree in business. Ray Goldwire now lives next door to his alma mater. Instead of a dorm, his new home is Oak Hammock at the University of Florida, a university-based retirement community, which offers him all the perks of a college campus, minus the term papers and final exams. In 2006, Carl, who founded George Mason University's Program in Senior Housing Administration, coined the term University-Based Retirement Community, or UBRC for short, to describe retirement communities that have a formal or informal relationship to a nearby university and, as a result, offer their residents academic benefits that others cannot. Like the Goldwires, many older Americans are trading the leisure circuit for the college campus and retirement. By moving close to a university, Carl said, seniors are primed to get what studies show they want. They want active, they want intellectually stimulating, and they want intergenerational retirement environments. Oak Hammock offers many opportunities to continue learning, from auditing college courses to attending lectures and classes held at the retirement center. There is a film society, fitness class, two pools, a choir, and a chamber music ensemble. Ray Goldwire even started a beekeeping program. He isn't looking for some magical fountain of youth, but he hopes that living near a university will help him to age better than his parents. My mother lived to 102, and I don't want to stick around and live in a nursing home like she did. It's up to me to sort of take care of myself, he said. Just as no two university campuses are identical, no two UBRCs are the same either. And some may be better managed than others to fulfill residents' expectations. Andrew Carl says there are steps that can be taken to achieve a win-win-win opportunity for the university, the retirement community, and the retirees. His five criteria for creating a successful UBRC are programming. Formalized programming between the university and retirement community is critical to create intergenerational diversity. Proximity. The UBRC has to be within a mile or so of the campus, or you won't feel like you're on the campus. And both 20-year-old college students and 80-year-old retirees are commonly without cars. Senior housing and health services. The retirement community has to have a full continuum of care and senior housing services, including independent living, assisted living, skilled nursing, and dementia care, which is, of course, a CCRC. Alumni base. At least 10% of the residents at the retirement community should be alums, former faculty member, or former employee of the university, in order to bring the culture and spirit of the university into the retirement community. Sound financial planning. The university should not operate the retirement community for legal, financial, and practical reasons. However, there should be some kind of financial relationship that ties the two together, because this gives both the incentive to help each other succeed and thrive. Of the approximately 70 retirement communities in the U.S. that tout their ties to nearby universities, Carl says only about a dozen meet three or more of his ideal criteria. While universities stand to gain new revenue streams by supporting these types of retirement communities, Carl says they serve the surrounding region too. If by 2030, one-fifth of the community is over the age of 65, Carl said, then you have an obligation to be paying attention to a fifth of your population. And now some more from Mark Thomas Architects Intergenerational Housing for Seniors on College Campuses. The value of intergenerational programming. It's like those are common to the UBRCs, which provide a variety of learning and social opportunities, including the sharing of cultural backgrounds and the exchange of opinions and ideas that benefit both the senior resident and the student and faculty population of the affiliated college or university. They've proven to be valuable in addressing issues of social isolation and inadequate support systems. For the colleges, the advantages are an economic boost to near-campus neighborhoods, building deeper loyalties and fostering planned giving, a lab setting for relevant college program disciplines, and creating a pool of experienced and motivated volunteers for university activities. The attractiveness for retirees include access to high-quality medical facilities often associated with universities, immersion in an intergenerational cosmopolitan community, access to volunteer opportunities, walkable access to shopping amenities and a town-like atmosphere, access to arts, culture, and lifelong learning, plus lively and diverse social and intellectual life. A considerable amount of effort is required in planning the programmatic relationship for a university-based retirement community to be successful. Mr. Carl cited the five criteria: proximity, formalized programming, full senior housing services, a strong alumni base, sound financial planning. For example, at LaSalle Village, a continuing care retirement community, on the campus of LaSalle College in Newton, Massachusetts, the residents are required to develop and satisfy a specified learning plan as a condition of residency in a unique living and learning program. University-affiliated retirement communities still represent a small percentage of the retirement community options, with fewer still meeting all of Mr. Carl's five criteria. For some retirees, there is a reluctance to come to campus because they find it somewhat intimidating. Additionally, the complexities of creating and administering an intergenerational program, safety and access concerns, and the logistics of sharing services and facilities pose challenges still to be overcome. There are an awful lot of things to think about if you're considering a continuing care community. I hope you found some of these articles informative. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for this show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.